Hi, everyone. Thank you for OA Footsteps for making this space here today and letting me share. And thank you all for being here. My name is Bill L., and I'm an agnostic and I am a compulsive overeater. My upbringing was not particularly religious, but I do think my scientific nature has led to my agnostic feelings about my spirituality. Every morning, though, I do wake up and thank God for another day of living, and at night, thank God for the day's blessings. Do I know if these prayers work? I don't know. But does it really matter? I think just vocalizing my gratitudes for this thing we call life helps me in my good recovery. I started in OA 16 months ago. As suggested, I attended a bunch of different meetings to get a feel for OA and to find meetings that spoke to me. One meeting that spoke to me was a secular meeting. I found that the lack of focus on religious talk and a different and refreshing view of this great program. There, I met people that had had success in this program who said that they struggled with the non-secular wording used in some of the OA meetings. Their reasons varied, but each had had success here. To me, that's what's important. To showcase this, I'd like to tell you a story about my grandma Ruth. She lived in a small town in a rural part of Tennessee where the congregations of a Southern Baptist church and a Southern Methodist church shared the same physical building for cost reasons. They took turns as to which choir practiced on which night, and they switched weekly as to which group had the early morning service and the late service because the late service got to have the picnic afterwards. One of my favorite stories about my grandmother is that one Sunday she was there at the early service, and after service let out, she was sitting there alone, and some woman incorrectly assumed that my grandmother needed a ride and approached her and offered to drive her home. My grandmother replied, "No, but thank you. I'm just waiting for the next service." The seemingly kind woman was shocked by my grandmother's response and then said with much disdain, "How can you sit with them and listen to that preacher?" To which my grandmother calmly replied, "Well, I don't think it matters who's saying the word of God, just as long as we listen." The woman quickly turned and marched out in a huff. So, for those of you that have a strong faith in religion, I would encourage you to love and nurture your faith in God. I don't see it as a bad thing. I mean, how can love be bad? Where I struggle with the power of someone's faith is that if that person feels my lack of faith is a character defect or something wrong with me, and something that should disqualify me from our program. As long as I'm here listening in OA, and I'm receiving the teachings and the wisdom of the fellowship of this program, does it matter if the God of my choosing is no God at all? I believe it does not, and that's why I'm committed to making OA a safe place for everyone and anyone that struggles with food. A little bit about my history. My compulsion with food probably started at age 6 after my parents got divorced. I remember my mom specifically saying, "Eat this," or I don't remember her saying, "Eat this and you'll feel better." But I know I had a change in my eating behaviors from the single fact that neither of my brothers could wear my hand-me-downs. For those that remember tough skins from Sears, I wore the Slims before first grade, and I wore Hefties after second grade. It was probably a good thing, though, that my brothers couldn't wear my hand-me-downs because I don't remember anyone else at school wearing plaid pants and Winnie the Pooh shirts. So they've never thanked me, but they should. Growing up, I never had more than two or three close friends because I trusted no one, and my family never talked about the divorce or my sad or angry feelings. And I'm sure this is where stuffing my feelings down with food became my main coping mechanism. Throughout my public schooling, I always seemed to be overweight. Not by much, but definitely enough for me to feel self-conscious of it. and for some reason I always seemed to be a bully magnet. To this day, I have no idea why I was the target of so many insults and abuse. In college, I had my first large influx of money thanks to 3 internships where I was paid an excellent salary. But this just made it easier to binge when I was back at school and wanted to numb out from the day-to-day stresses. 6 months after graduating, I met my soulmate. 2 years after that, we were married and moved away from my hometown of Washington, D.C. to Colorado. 5 years later, I became a dad. For my first 30 years on this earth, I would guess that my weight was simply creeping higher and higher with each trauma that I faced in life. By the time my kid Katie was born, I was 230 pounds. So it was time that I got serious about my weight. I saw a nutritionist for a while, but it stopped when I realized, as the father of a newborn, that I thought sugar and caffeine made a wonderful substitute for sleep. After that, every single diet I tried, everything would be perfect until life threw me another curveball, where my diet was then jettisoned, and my weight eventually rose back up past where it was when I began. Fast forward 25 years, and I ended up with a blood glucose level over 600 that sent me to the ER, where I discovered that I had type 2 diabetes. You add in a worldwide pandemic, and I ballooned up to 900. I only ballooned up to 392 pounds. My waist was so big that I needed to buy seatbelt extenders to be able to fit in my family's cars. And when we went to buy a new car, we had to go up a model so that I could fit behind the steering wheel. I joined OA on March 31st, 2024. It was the Friday after Memorial Day on a weekend where I binged on takeout food during a 3-day pity party while my family was out of town. I felt I could not stop eating. I hated my body, and I knew that I was an embarrassment to my friends and family. I now weighed more than both of my brothers combined. I had tried a weight loss drug that suppressed my appetite, but my disease didn't care if I was hungry or not, and the weight just came on, so I cut it cold turkey. I simply ate around the clock. I felt my life would be cut short if I continued to stay morbidly obese, but I really couldn't figure out what to do. After my family got back home from Florida, I admitted to my wife that I went on this binge and I had poor food choices and a depressive episode. She once again suggested I go to group therapy. I had tried group therapy once before and really didn't like it, but I felt I had hit rock bottom and I was willing to try anything. So I Googled overeating groups, and the second result was Overeaters Anonymous. Thank goodness it was on that Google result. Today I feel so lucky to have found OA, these rooms, all you fellows, and all the hope and joy that you share. These meetings are the only group I have ever been a part of that truly accepts me for who I am, as I am, and that includes my biological family. The end of today, I will have been abstinent for 482 days. I'm eating more fruits and vegetables than ever before, and I've been able to drop 2 of my blood pressure medicines, both of my diuretics, and 4 times I've cut my metformin dosage in half. My last blood test showed that I had dropped my bad cholesterol to the normal range. I have no idea the last time that was true. And now I have to call my doctor when my glucose level gets too low to see if I can cut another prescription from my daily regimen. My cravings for junk food and sugar are now in remission, but I'm so careful to prevent a setback that I won't even have a single red food list item because I'm afraid that it'll just slip again and all this will be for naught. Will I ever have a red food list item again? I don't know what the future holds, But today, during this meeting, during my talk, I will not. So once again, I thank all of you for being here and being part of my recovery. I've made some great friends in these rooms, and I cherish every one of you that I get a chance to meet. I've been able to hear some amazing stories on pain transformed into strength and hope. And I'm so much a better person than I was 93 weeks ago. I can't even imagine what the future holds in store for me. And while I love to say that OA is full of rainbows and unicorns and a symphony of universal harmonies, there are still some rough spots. I struggle with starchy carbs. Nothing too bad, but I can still fall into old mental ruts of not measuring them out when life gets a bit overwhelming. And making sure I have a daily food plan is critical to keep this in check. And while I know that the bathroom scale is not one of the 9 tools of recovery that we just read, I still feel the need to be on the scale. Almost every day, I really want to weigh myself. But I don't. I would love my goal to be only weighing myself at the doctor's appointments. If I thought it could help, though, I would bury my scale in the backyard. But I know how tricky this disease can be. I can find some excuse to weigh myself, and I would be down on all fours, digging up in the backyard like a dog looking for a bone just to pull the scale out and weigh myself once more. But being that I'm at the mercy of the scale, what am I to do? I've tried to completely distort the measurement of weight. So one morning, my caffeine-starved brain pondered, what is my weight if it's just a number with an arbitrary unit of measurement? So if that's the case, how many molecules of caffeine do I weigh? I then calculated that I'm roughly the equivalent of the caffeine molecules in over 3 million cups of black tea. So I decided that morning that my official unit of measurement for recovery should be 3 mcbs, or millions of cups of black tea. But what's really worked for me with the scale is chance. As part of my morning journaling, I flip a coin, and if it comes up 3 days in a row heads or 3 days in a row tails, it's a weigh-in day. The nice thing with this approach is that there's no cheating the night before, knowing that if I'm good, the number's going to come out good. I mean, the number's just going to be what the number is. So what is working in my program? Well, whenever I'm tempted by food, I just tell myself, just for today, that's not my food. Much like fine art in a museum, I can appreciate the beauty and the craftsmanship put into a piece of food. But just like an art museum, I'll be in big trouble if I just lay one finger on a particular item. And when I don't feel like exercising, thanks to a recovery circle of mine, I can tell myself I'm a body in motion and I'm worthy of recovery. To me, exercise is like cleaning the toilet. I don't think anybody does either for fun, but doing them regularly prevents a lot of unpleasant problems later. And whenever I don't feel like going to a meeting, I try to read OA literature, like this morning's For Today. I need to remind myself that the OA program is one of action, going to meetings, working the steps, making 12-step calls, all part of my life of abstinence and sanity. And the most important thing I tell myself is keep coming back. When I'm down or I'm feeling off course, it's this fellowship that gets me feeling right. And I would like to close my share with the closing paragraph from the OA pamphlet, What If I Don't Believe in God? So many of us cry out, I can't do it, I'm different. When we took the time to try, choosing instead lives of abstinence and working the steps, we stopped being the one for whom the program just wouldn't work and became one of the thousands for whom it did work, every day, one day at a time. Thank you all again for being here and listening to my share. With that, I'll pass.